You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. So hang on to something, because here we go. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello, kids. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for July 18th, 2014. You know, I spent the vast majority of my adult life almost constantly traveling all over North America. And I've got to say that of all the places I have ever been, that the state of Texas has to be my very favorite place in the whole world to not be. And so this week, I am going to hurl my first thunderbolt at my favorite place, do not be.
I have this feeling that my luck is none too good. This sword here at my side don't act the way it should. Keeps calling me its master, but I feel like its slave. Hauling me faster and faster to an early, early grave.
You too many black blades in the state of Texas.
I'm told it's my duty to fight against the law. That wizardry is my trade, and I was born to wait to go. I just want to be a lover, not a red-eyed screaming ghoul. I wish it picked another to be its killing tool.
So kids, Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, has refused to sign on to Obamacare, even though the vets paid for nearly all of it for a very long time. Rick Perry doesn't believe in spending a penny of public funds on health care for individuals. However, Governor Perry is backing state funding for gay conversion therapy. He also compared being gay to being an alcoholic. He said that even if it is wired into your brain, that you can be an alcoholic who refuses to drink. And the same for being gay. Wow. Let's pause on that one for a second. Alcohol is a thoroughly deadly and highly addictive drug that induces violence, wrecks families, destroys lives, and is directly responsible for tens of thousands of deaths every year. Alcohol abuse causes serious damage to literally every organ in your body except your inner ear. Withdrawing from alcohol addiction often kills people. And those it doesn't kill often wish that it would. Alcohol devastates our culture, and no other single causative factor is so closely linked with violence in our society. As far as I know, the only social cost that being gay causes is that it brings discomfort to homophobes.
It's death from the beginning to the end of time. And I'm the cosmic champion, and I hold a mystic sign, and the whole world's dying, and the burden's mine, and the black soul keeps on killing till the end of time.
And wielding another black blade, Senator James Inhofe has accused Barack Obama of attempting to force Americans to live out the president's green dream. Well, let's pause again on that one. That is just bizarre. The only green dream that I can imagine connected in any way to Barack Obama would be if someone took Jon Stewart's advice and started growing in Obama's Green Dream strain for the new pot stores. It should be one of those downer-type indica strains that first makes you stupid and then puts you to sleep. Myself, I'm a fan of a sativa speed weed strains, which have the opposite effect. And speaking of bizarre, Dick Cheney is criticizing Barack Obama's conduct of the Iraq occupation. Well, let's pause again on that one. So is this clueless chutzpah or utter profound cosmic total absolute tone deafness? And speaking of bizarre, in relation to Dick Cheney, did you know that Dick Cheney literally does not have a heart? This is absolutely true. His heart was replaced with a pump a few years ago. This means that Dick Cheney literally no longer has a heartbeat. Dick Cheney literally no longer has a pulse. Before this happened, I couldn't have ever imagined in a thousand years anything that would ever in a million years be able to make Dick Cheney even creepier than he already was. As far as I can tell, Cheney is functioning completely normally without his heart. But I don't think he actually used it all that much, even when he had one. I recently reported that Jeff Bezos built Amazon by deploying ruthless cutthroat methods and undercutting everyone else's prices and paying no sales taxes and putting local retailers out of business all over the country. I reported that he operated literal sweatshops with horrendous working conditions for his workers right here in the United States, and that he had both purchased the Washington Post as a propaganda outlet, and that he had almost simultaneously inked a $600 million contract with the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, there's new news to report from the Jeff Bezos front. And this is a real shocker, kids. Bezos has revealed that Amazon has a secret laboratory in Seattle where he claims that over the last few months, Amazon has worked through and developed an eighth generation of drones that can carry 5-pound packages through the sky at 50 miles per hour, and he is now asking permission of the FAA to unleash them.
Oh, jeez. Another day, another crisis. Oh well, time once again to gird our loins and go into the breach to do some battle and to kick some serious ass.
Now the most amazing thing about the coverage of this event is that it is barely there. And what is there seems to be accepting this as some sort of novelty or joke or something. Ironically, the most extensive coverage I could find was on the local Seattle weekly, The Stranger. A few things you should know about this. There was recently a Seattle woman who spotted a tiny drone hovering just outside her bedroom window as she was changing. And Ms. Surveillance State herself, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, spotted a drone inches from her face just outside her window. A woman in Sydney, Australia, recently found a drone hovering just outside her kitchen window, and the police explained that it was a real estate agent drone. A real estate agent drone? That's just what we needed! And now, after all that, the mad scientist Jeff Bezos announces that he has been developing several generations of drones in a secret undercover laboratory in Seattle, and he is now ready to unleash his swarm of drones into our skies? All of this coming shortly after inking his $600 million contract with the Central Intelligence Agency? Really? Does that completely creep out anyone besides me? This seems like the plot of a very bad B-grade movie. Except this is for real. In spite of being located in the most populous state in the United States, my hometown, Ridgecrest, California, is about as far from anywhere else as you can be in the contiguous United States whilst still remaining anywhere at all. And that is not the only anomaly about my hometown. The town is called Ridgecrest, even though it sits in the bottom of a valley. The only reason Ridgecrest exists is because the feds built a naval base there in the 1940s, even though there is no ocean within 150 miles. This naval base is called China Lake, even though there is no lake. It is a military base, but there are virtually no military personnel actually stationed there. Now, the United States Naval Weapons Center is one of the places where the government spends serious cash inventing ways to kill lots of people. The Sidewinder missile was invented at China Lake, for instance. Now, most of the population of Ridgecrest was employed in this field. Rather than military personnel, the China Lake Ridgecrest area is populated mostly by civil service scientists and engineers and such. My father was a radar engineer, for instance. Now, the Naval Weapons Center sprawls out over California's southeastern desert, taking up more area than the entire state of Delaware. Now, a large part of that area is used to blow stuff up. Ironically, since access to vast swaths of this desert is absolutely forbidden, and since armed patrols enforce that edict, the areas where they don't blow stuff up are undisturbed feral ecosystems. Now, another factor in the local ecological reality is that back in the 1930s, the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, already a major political force in California politics even back then, swept through the Mono Basin and the Owens Valley. They bought, bribed, and stole all of the water using scandalous methods that are still controversial to this day. Now, on one hand, they have caused an environmental disaster by largely drying up a spectacular high mountain salt lake called Mono Lake. Now, in addition to being a disaster for migrating birds, vast swaths of the former lake bed are now covered with a fine alkaline dust made up of all kinds of weird minerals and stuff. And this dust blows up into monstrous dust storms that blanket the entire surrounding area for hundreds of miles, and that covers the few residents who live in the area. But on the other hand, the area has spectacular beauty and it cannot be developed because there is no water. Because Los Angeles takes it all. Now, all of this is leading up to a theme, so please be patient with me here for another moment. Now, another factor in my slowly developing theme here is that this was at the time when illicit drugs were becoming popular, and lots of these educated, middle-class, all-American civil service yuppies were moving their teenagers from places like San Diego and Oakland to try to get their kids away from drugs. In other words, in order to get their kids away from drugs, they moved them to a place where there was absolutely nothing for a teenager to do except to do drugs. In 1969, my high school, Burroughs High School, had the highest percentage of admitted to drug users of any high school in the state of California. Now, for a period of about 2 years, from age 15 to 16, I hung out with a kid named Eddie Adams. Now, Eddie's big brother was the president of an outlaw motorcycle club out of Las Vegas called the Gents. Thus, for a period of time, I became a kid that they let hang around, and I spent much of that time partying with bikers. Which finally brings me to the point that this was all leading to. Now, these bikers had an extensive and strict code of honor that they lived by. It was a code of honor that was sick, perverted, sexist, misogynistic, violent, and senseless, but it was their code, and they were living by it. Now, since they adhered to this code of honor, they considered themselves to be good people. Any brothers who violated the code were bad people. And depending on who it was and depending on what they did, they may be shunned, if not much worse. Now, I am thinking that possibly the corporate monsters have some sick code of honor of their own, and that maybe they also think that they are good people as long as they follow their perverted code. Wow. Think about the implications of that for just a second. Codes of honor, or the lack of same, Ahmed Chalabi was an Iraqi expatriate that crawled out from under some Middle Eastern rock and discovered that he was a born CIA asset. Mr. Chalabi was the central source for the Bush administration's assertion that Iraq had WMDs. Mr. Chalabi was the asset that produced the liar that was the source for Bush's lie that got us into the Iraq invasion and occupation. In other words, Mr. Chalabi is a sneaky, opportunistic, CIA-sponsored slime ball. Yippee! Now, there is buzz that Mr. Chalabi is the favorite of the Obama people to be their next token puppet on the throne in Iraq. Perfect. Now here's a quote from Mr. Chalabi when a journalist questioned him about his lie. Mr. Chalabi said, "We are heroes in error. As far as we're concerned, we've been entirely successful." Yes, that tyrant Saddam is gone, and the Americans are in Baghdad. What was said before is not important. So according to Mr. Chalabi's code of honor, or lack of same, it is perfectly acceptable to help lie the United States into a 10-year war that was utterly disastrous to everyone involved except war contractors. This is perfectly fine, as long as you get what you want. what was said before is not important. Really? Not important to whom? So I have one more story about my, quote, biker days I would like to share with you before we finish. One of the rules I had trouble adhering to was the prescription against falling asleep on the first night of a run. Now, this was more a tradition than an actual code of violation, but the repercussions could be memorable.
The hare has lost his spectacles.
Well, just as long as he did not fall asleep on the first night of a run, because if they liked you, then you might wake up to find a dozen very drunk bikers pissing on you. If they didn't like you, you may wake up to find yourself on fire or hanging by your ankles or something along those lines. For some of these gentlemen had quite vivid imaginations. Now, everyone who knows me knows that I jerk awake at a ridiculously early hour of the morning, and that I go full bore all day, and that usually around 9 p.m. I run out of gas and I become like everyone else is first thing in the morning. Thus, during my biker days, tongue in cheek there, I had to learn to hide myself very well before passing out on the first night of a run. And on that note, we're going to take a quick station break now. Be back in a minute. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. All right, we're back. If this sounds rather echoey, and if you hear a hum in the background, that is because I am recording this vocal in my kitchen to avoid disturbing my roommate, and the refrigerator is running in the background. Anyway, as you probably noticed, I've reached all the way back to 2014 for this week's show, and it's somewhat amazing and actually quite alarming that these old shows are still as relevant as they are. For instance, this next piece about modern-day bounty hunters. Did you know that oil was the major factor behind both World Wars I and II? Franz Ferdinand was a pretext. World War I started for many reasons, but the central reason was that the British were totally freaked out about a German plan to construct a Berlin to Baghdad railway to transport Middle Eastern oil to Germany and German soldiers to Baghdad if necessary. After World War I, Iraq was the biggest spoil of all. Shortly after this, John D. Rockefeller originally established relations with the Saudi royal family. I mentioned that prior to the American invasion, Iraq had several top-notch universities. Well, those are the remnants of a program wherein John D. Rockefeller established numerous universities throughout the Middle East. He considered this to be the second most important investment that Standard Oil could make. Now, these universities were specifically designed to win local hearts and minds, and they did just that. The oppressive British colonial system of direct political control, the Americans instead controlled certain locals who would do their dirty work for them. Thus, while the Americans were still calling the shots, it appeared as if the locals were running the show. Educating an elite class amongst the locals was necessary to implementing such a system of indirect control. Yeah, we'll just hire some bounty hunters to run that country for us. How did all of our oil get under their sand anyway? Hello, kids. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for August 1st, 2014. This week, the Thunderbolt will be exploring the mysteries of the human brain. Now, intelligence is a very weird thing. There are completely different kinds of intelligence that operate from completely different parts of the brain. Now, how all of these different parts are wired together, or in some cases how they are not wired together, is what makes you into who you are and into who you are not. Now, most people have a more or less balance of all the different kinds of intelligence. While some have lots of some kinds and little, if any, of other kinds. Now, a genius is usually someone who has heavy gauge wiring to a certain part of his or her brain, but this is often at the cost of another part. Then, at the extreme end, you have the savants, such as the 12-year-old kid, who was one of the best piano players in the world, but who did not know how to dress himself. Now, when someone is exceptionally intelligent, then what kind of intelligence are we speaking of? Even exceptionally intelligent people can have major blind spots. And in fact, this seems to be the rule rather than the exception. For instance, my favorite author I have ever read is hands down, no one else even comes close, within light years, no doubt about it, Tom Robbins. The author of such works of epic insanity as Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, and my personal favorite, Skinny Legs and All. No other author, even Joseph Heller, has so mastered the profound revelatory joke as the one and only grandmaster of the profound dirty joke, Mr. Tom Robbins. However, my mother had a brother who was a Mensa-level genius and who scored off the charts on all standard intelligence tests. Yet Tom Robbins was the equivalent of gibberish to him. Upon questioning him about this, he first pointed out the complete idiocy, in his mind, of a female protagonist whose most notable characteristic was that she had giant thumbs. He just couldn't get past that. And I slowly understood that, as impressive as my uncle's brain was, His circuits for both irony and metaphor were either constricted or missing altogether. Now, since blistering ironic metaphor is about the only language that Tom Robbins ever speaks, my uncle just didn't get it. He also completely failed to get me, but unlike Tom Robbins, he liked me anyway. Then, there are other factors that are not usually considered as intelligence. Emotion, for instance, is a form of intelligence. And again, I point to a savant to highlight this. There was a child who could figure out insanely complex mathematical equations in his head, but that was absolutely all that he ever did. He never showed any emotion whatsoever because the circuitry simply did not exist in his brain. He was literally incapable of love, joy, hatred, or any other complex emotion. Now, I have read that being the mother to such a child is a particularly cruel hell. Can you imagine raising a child and never receiving any emotional feedback of any kind whatsoever? Now, vibes are another form of intelligence. Last week, I mentioned my childhood friend Eddie Adams, whose older brothers were member of the Outlaw motorcycle gang. Now, Eddie and I were purchasing drugs once, and it was completely obvious to me from the very first vibe that the guy selling the drugs was up to no good and was certainly about to rip us off. When the guy said that we had to front our money, I waited for Eddie to tell him where he could stick it. But instead, Eddie gave the guy our money. And it soon became obvious to me that Eddie Adams was simply incapable of vibing people. And he hadn't seen it coming. Now, a few years later, I was with a girlfriend named Kim when we visited the home of another couple. Now, the vibe was very intense between the other couple. While we were there, the male half of the other couple had blared "Since I've Been Loving You" by Led Zeppelin at full volume, whilst he glared at his female partner. Now, to me, this was a dominating, oppressive atmosphere that I was not enjoying at all. Now, Eddie Adams was not the brightest light bulb in the house, but Kim was. She had been a straight-A student and a valedictorian. When I expressed my relief at escaping the situation, Kim was shocked. Surprised, I questioned her, and I learned that Kim had completely failed to notice the vibe. Now, when Eddie Adams had failed to see the ripoff coming, I had just figured that I was smarter than he was. And to be honest, that was a pretty low bar. But I knew that Kim was a lot smarter than I was, so that indicated that the ability to vibe at people wasn't directly connected to intelligence, or at least to that kind of intelligence. Then there's the factor of how you use your intelligence. Is your intelligence channeled into narrow streams, for instance? Or are you capable of thinking outside the box? As part of my training during my brief collision with the United States Army, I ran a 2-mile course through the woods at night while a bunch of Special Forces dudes were trying to capture me. Now, my strategy was obvious to me as soon as I understood the exercise. Thus, upon the signal that the chase had begun, immediately found the first bush that was big enough to hide me, and I crawled underneath it. Then I lay there for about 10 minutes, listening to people being captured all around me. Then I lay there for another half hour as I listened to the action move down the course away from me. And then I lay there until there had been total silence for a long time. And then I casually strolled through the 2 mile course without incident. I did not see anyone until I walked into the destination camp and checked in. It had been a really nice night for a walk. Now, this was back in the days of the draft, and a lot of my fellow soldiers were highly intelligent. Yet, in listening to them speaking later, the strategy that had instantly fallen into my head and that had earned seemed so obvious to me had not crossed a single one of their minds. A couple of them even said, "Wow, why didn't I think of that?" Why indeed? Now, there's a lot of research going into brains these days, and there are a lot of truly wondrous possibilities in such research, along with formidable dangers. As with all complex systems, and the human brain is the most complex system in the known universe, everything is all tied together, and altering one part also changes everything else. Eliminating undesirable brain wiring circuitry can have unpredictable and undesirable consequences. However, with exceptionally problematic behaviors, perhaps the risks would be acceptable to the sufferers. For instance, virtually all violent criminals were abused as children. Their reaction to this abuse is actually completely predictable and even normal, if highly problematic. So what if it were possible to subtly alter their brain wiring jobs to eliminate just certain problematic neural paths? Now, child molesters are particularly sad cases because they literally cannot help their sexual proclivities any more than the practitioners of any other sexual proclivity can. Yet child molesters absolutely cannot be allowed to operate freely in our society. What if sexual proclivities could be rewired? The profound dangers are obvious. A lot of this research is being done by for-profit entities rather than for reasons of pure science, and a lot of those guys are likely to use whatever they learn in nefarious ways rather than for the betterment of humanity. For instance, they could rewire a brain to incite ultra-violence. They could eliminate the conscience and morality circuits in soldiers so that they can be true sociopathic killers. Or what if someone came to power and decreed that music was evil and mandated that the musical circuits in everyone's brains must be destroyed? And yes, there is a special music section of your brain that closely interacts with the mathematics section. Yin and yang seem to be becoming much yinier and yangier these days. May you live in interesting times.
So, that's it for the news and commentary section for this week's show. Now I'm not only going to fill in the rest of the hour with some music, but this week I'll be featuring tunes that I have lifted from the library of Free Radio Olympia, which is one of the broadcast outlets for the Thunderbolt, which is why I have access to their library. Anyway, this is Chase Matthew. Enjoy.
The trucker on the road just built a heavy load, and his truck it almost rolled off.
off the highway. Well, he's 55 years old and his things have all been sold and his fingertips are cold as an ice tray. Ah, but his radio works fine. So he ain't got no troubles on his mind. And the miner in his shaft just lost better half. And on top of that, she kidnapped their daughter. Well, he never did learn math and he never found a path. And he'll probably never do what he ought. But it's radio works fine. So he ain't got no reason why.
Radio.
And the farmer in the field didn't get no yield, so he
beeswax lip balm in my pocket. It's a 1 megaton nuclear warhead strapped to the shaft of a Persian crotch rocket. Davy Crockett in your cockpit, ready to explore your wild frontier, baby.
What? Quit playing.
No, I'm just kidding. Damn. Jack, be nimble. Jack, be quick. Pass me a thimble and I'll stick it on my dick. I'm small. Got small balls, my penis is the teeniest thing you never saw. I'm small.
Small.
I got small balls, my penis is the teeniest genius of them all. I'm small.
Small.
I got small balls.
Your weenie is so teeny.
You should see me in a bikini. I'm small.
Yeah.
My balls are small, but I got the ingredients. Stand tall.
Oh.
Don't call me big. I like being little. Some fellows are cellos. I like being the fiddle. It's more portable. To be hung might be horrible. Grizzly bears are scary. I'm adorably small.
Small. I got small balls. My penis is the teeniest thing you never saw. I'm small. I got small balls. My penis is the teeniest genius of them all. I'm small. I got small balls.
What a minuscule zucchini.
You should see me in a bikini. I'm small. My balls are small, but I got the ingredients to stand tall.
I've only grown 2 inches since the day I was one. When I was negative 2 inches, now I'm negative none. You do the math and subtract at a half and I'm back. You figured I was bigger, but as a matter of fact, I'm small.
Bitter when I'm strong, giggle when you're calm, cause I tickle you with my tongue. It's fun when I wiggle my little gun. Finger on the trigger is no bigger than your thumb.
I'm small.
I got small balls. My penis is the teeniest thing you never saw. I'm small. I got small balls. My penis is the teeniest genius of them all. I'm small. I've got small balls.
Your weenie is so teeny.
You should see me in a bikini. I'm small.
Yeah.
My balls are small, but I got the ingredients. Yes, y'all.
Ball hogs, beware of the small dogs. Small dogs, be scared of the ball frogs. Ball frogs, stay away from the polywogs. Polywogs,
what?
Give all praise to God. To the people, the power, we're just small. So power to the people, yes, y'all. To my small ball brothers and big ass mamas, the meek shall inherit the earth like Dalai Lama.
That was New Radio by Bikini Kill with Joan Jett. Before that, we had Small by Sandman, and we started that set off with Radio Works Fine from Chase Matthew. Glad you were here with us this week. Hope to see you next week. I had fun. Hope you did too. And in the meanwhile...
Thank you very much.